Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
And now, from beyond our dimension, this is the Jeff Mara Podcast. Here's Jeff.
My guest is Julian Vaughn, who during his near-death experience saw his deceased wife on the other side, which we're going to learn about and more. Julian, thank you for joining me and welcome.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Julian, let's start on the day that you died during that NDE and go from there.
So the first NDE that I had was when I was only 10 months old. And of course, people don't typically remember things from that age. But I was playing with my dad's wolf. He had a timber wolf as a pet. And I tried climbing on her back, and not a good idea with the, 200-pound canine. And she turned and snapped at me. And I don't know if the viewers can see, I know my camera is not the highest quality, but there's a pretty significant V-shaped scarring on the top of my head and down into my eye. And she basically ripped my head open, and I had to have 5 spinal taps. And basically that was my near-death experience, the first one. After my second one, I got interested in recovering memories and got into hypnotherapy and regression work especially. And it was with that regression work that I began to remember what happened when I was a toddler, and then link that to what had happened later and qualitatively recognize that these were related experiences. The actual experience was the first NDE was very much the stereotype of an NDE experience. There was the pulling into a tunnel of light, an increased velocity into the light. There was this warmth and love and, feelings of compassion and safety and comfort. Like, all the pain was just completely absent, as if it had never existed at all. And so that experience for me really is just the earliest memory to sort of set the stage, I think. I think that most people who survive near-death experiences and have memory from those experiences believe that the universe or God or whatever label they want to use has a plan, has a purpose for all of this. And I think that first NDE for me was to set the stage for what was coming in the future. The second and the third ones are the ones that have the most content. And it was in the second one that I saw my wife. She was actually present in the third as well. And in the second one, unfortunately, my wife had passed away 4 days prior. She died November 29th, 2011. And I just couldn't deal. I'm religious now, and I was actually still religious back then. But it didn't matter. I was so bitter and angry, and we were so close to achieving, the kinds of American dream kind of goals. And then she just died very unexpectedly. And so I really just couldn't handle it. And I tried to kill myself. I don't want to get into the details of how, but I was found cold and blue the next morning. Apparently traumatized my other family and loved ones, which is something I deeply regret. But the experience was that first I had to deal with the consequences of trying to end my life prematurely. I have called that hell, but it's nothing like what, you know, the classical religious explanations of that were like. Instead, it was more like the life review that you hear a lot of NDE experiencers talk about, but it was like an inverted negative life review. Like, these are all the things you've done wrong. Look at all the harm that you did. And the pain of that, the emotional pain of recognizing firsthand the consequences of my bad choices, it felt like I had betrayed myself with every one of them. And once I finally stopped resisting, and this was the key to transforming that experience, I relived these experiences. They weren't stopping. And I kept arguing in my mind with God as a concept, like, why am I going through this? Like, isn't it enough that my wife died? And you know, I even threw out quotes about, you know, from my religious tradition about, you're not supposed to hold it against somebody when they say things during times of grief. And so, you know, I was kind of shaking my fist at the heavens, like, you know, I'm grieving. It's you that made it that way. And finally, though, like I said, after repeating all of this several times, I just sort of threw up my hands and said, I guess I deserve this. It's true. And I started to realize that what was lacking in my life before that was a conscious connection of empathy with others. Like, I knew how to sympathize. I knew how to empathize as a, you know, as a task, but natural empathy, I don't want to say it was absent. I wasn't like a psychopath or anything, but I certainly did not think about the consequences of my actions as much before as I did after, and still do. And during the experience, as soon as I surrendered and basically said, you know, okay, God, this is it. I admit it. I deserve this. At that moment, the entire thing changed. And it was like the entire cosmos of the experience just completely transformed in the most spectacular way. The darkness over top of me, which was basically like a canopy of pure black. It's like if the sky had no stars and there was no light pollution, and it was just a pure blackness over top of everything. The experience before that, where I was reliving all these scenes out of my life, the scenes seemed like they were disconnected. Instead of the flow of natural events in life, it was more like a dream, how one thing can happen and then suddenly you're somewhere else and a completely different event is going on. And all of the good moments were being ignored. I was only reliving those negative ones for the consequences. And suddenly, like I said, when I surrendered, that blackness just ripped wide open and there was just this blinding, brilliant, golden white light on the other side of it. And like a sci-fi tractor beam, I felt myself just sucked straight up. And I wasn't brought through this rip in the veil, for lack of a better phrase. I was left hovering in between. But on the other side of it, I guess as my spiritual vision adjusted or whatever it was, because these things aren't physical. I know a lot of people think of heaven as a physical thing, but you talk to pretty much any of us near-death experiencers, these are very spiritual, non-physical experiences, and they transcend how real this world is. Like, as real as this conversation feels, and it feels for me to sit outside and feel the sun on my shoulder and all of that, these all of them felt so much more primary and real, as if this is the level of reality from which the material world comes. And as I was floating there in that middle space, I looked across that chasm and or that rip in the veil into that realm that was like made of light. And I saw my wife, and I saw she had unfortunately had many, many pregnancies that she miscarried. and she had a couple of children that were stillborn, and she had her firstborn son was actually 6 months old when he passed away. And I saw her with all these kids, like they were having a picnic. And she was just completely filled with joy. Like I'd never seen her in this life. She looked so much happier and more vibrant than I'd ever seen her. And it comforted me instantly, because part of my anger was feeling like she had been robbed of the future that we were building. But really, it was just me. But I can't say that it was necessarily robbery anymore either, because subsequent experiences and realizations put it all into a framework that makes it make more sense. And I'm still mad at God, if I'm being completely honest. I trust that the supreme force causing all of creation to exist is there. I trust that it is a force of good. I trust that it is constantly moving everything towards good. And I trust that it is infinitely beyond my capacity to comprehend. But just like a little kid who, you know, it's bedtime and their toys got taken away and they're not ready to let go, I can't let go. And I keep trying. That's actually what got me into the hypnotherapy work in the first place. That's my continuing ongoing struggle. And even as somebody that witnesses these kinds of events, and for that matter, miraculous events in normal life, I still can't stop feeling some type of way at God. And it's not like a rebellious, like, I hate you, God, why would you do this? I'm going to do my own thing. It's like I said, it's just that I don't understand why you let this happen to me, kind of an anger. And in the NDE, when she became visible to me, she finally looked over at me. And there was no verbal speech, but I could hear her voice in my head. And she basically was telling me, like, why would you try to end your life now when you have so much more to do? And I didn't really understand at first what she meant. I thought that this was just more of the same old from my life of people constantly telling me, you know, God's going to use you for something important, blah, blah, blah. Just the kind of things that you tell a gifted person in a religious context. I've heard it told to so many people that I never took it all that seriously. And so I didn't really register what she was talking about at first. And then she explained, after all the years that we were together, I'm the closest representation of her to carry her memory forward. And by killing myself, I was robbing her children, our children, and so many other people from getting to know more about her, from her memory being a blessing. And I had done significant harm in trying to kill myself without even realizing it. And so when I woke up and my family's all gathered around me crying and the EMTs are coming in trying to give me Narcan, that was beyond traumatizing for them. I wasn't traumatized by that. I was still angry. Even after that experience, I came to and I felt like the experience was real and valid, but I just didn't know how to move forward. And so it became a matter of enduring until I could handle it. And I got involved in, like I said, hypnotherapy after that, and deep types of meditation. I did get into, legally, for the viewers that are curious, psychedelic exploration. And I found that while there's overlap with a lot of these things, they're not the same thing. I do think that people can gain insights from any spiritual experience. So, you know, whether somebody's fasting and praying or somebody has a near-death experience, I don't think that it necessarily defines whether or not someone's experience is important. I think that my experiences were important, especially for me and for those who can benefit from learning about those experiences. I don't really care for what comes out of the scene of the near-death experience movement, if you will. I don't know that it's a majority or a minority, but I get frustrated with people who make absolutist claims. Like, oh, I saw this and that's all there is, and I understand everything about creation and the universe, and that kind of mindset. I can understand why somebody would think that after one experience, because there is this feeling of like infinite comprehension and unity. And there's nothing that comes close to explaining that. Like, it is genuinely an ineffable experience. But having multiple, it built on itself. And so, though I felt like I had been exposed to this infinite reality, and perhaps it was like an infinite subset of a larger infinity, it ended up humbling me instead of making me overly confident. I don't have any doubt in the veracity of the experiences. I mentioned to you before we started that I do question memory. You know, neuroscience is pretty clear that human memory is quite fallible. And I don't know where my memory would become distorted on an issue. Nobody does, because that's the nature of the distortions of memory. Your mind is producing the information that it didn't necessarily pick up the first time. And so I don't think that in at least our finite forms in this life that we're capable of carrying over that information from the other side. And so even if we had the whole of creation revealed, it doesn't mean we know everything when we come back. And I try to stay as humble as possible when I deal with this topic, because I'm a product of multiple faith backgrounds. And one of the most upsetting things in my life personally has always been those people who tell you, don't ask questions, don't seek, just take my word for it. And I know with near-death experiences, that's a little bit harder, because seeking that is not a viable option. But I think that while it is a lesser experience, people who are fascinated with near-death experiences should get into a faith path that explores meditation and cognitive work and exploring, you know, perhaps their own religion's mystical traditions. If they don't have a religion, then, you know, pick up just basic meditation practices. Explore these things mentally, because the mind is it really is the soul. In fact, the Greek word for mind and soul is the same word, psuche, where we get the word psyche from. So, yeah, that's pretty much the bulk of the second experience, which is the key one that really shifted my perspective and made me a lot more appreciative of life.
Julian, thank you for sharing your experiences with us. Do you feel that your life review was a way to convince you to come back and make better choices?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I didn't want to come back. During the more hellacious part, I just wanted that to end. But once that ended, and I realized that accepting the consequences for my actions was how to get away from those consequences by actually letting them fulfill themselves, that was the key to me coming back as well, because I realized that if I don't want to have to relive something similar, then I need to get through this life as, I don't want to say as holy or as cleanly or pure as I, as possible. Those concepts are absolutely relevant, but to try and make it as cross-platform comprehensible as I can, I think it was like it was important for me to realize we all need to get through life thinking about the perpetual consequences of our actions on others. And if we all have that kind of empathy and we all have that kind of heartfelt connection and realization that we're all one, then it sounds like some hippie stuff from the 60s or, you know, but one love, one people, one soul is really what humanity is. And all of the ego, all of the personal, you know, feelings of separation and nobody understands me, I'm unique in the world. We are unique, but it's so interesting how the universe made it that we're unique, but we all fit into a singular super organism. And even if you look at it biologically, the earth produces us. We're the fruit of the planet. And every spiritual tradition recognizes these concepts in some way, shape, or form. And I think that if we can go through life thinking about our actions and how they have a consequence on others, not just about the consequence of how it will impact our choices or progress, but how will this impact everyone else? You know, we could very literally find world peace, but that's, you know, very idealistic and of course would require everybody having the same level of enlightenment at the same time. And I'm not unrealistic. I don't expect that to just magically happen. But it for sure was key in driving me back to myself. And it was key in me returning to myself after my third NDE, which I'd actually been robbed and thrown off of the Mount Washington Overlook in Pittsburgh.
Well, before we go there, let me ask you a few more questions. I know you were grieving with the loss of your life, and you were angry at God and may still be. But have you ever paused to consider that maybe her life's journey is completely independent of you?
I'm not sure that I can agree with completely independent, because everybody is interdependent.
Mm-hmm.
But what helped me move forward, which also happened after the third NDE, was becoming aware sort of something along those lines, which is that she simply had completed her role in this particular life. I'm from a spiritual tradition that does believe in a type of reincarnation. We do believe very differently from the concepts of reincarnation in India and in Hinduism and Buddhism. But there's some overlap of concepts. And for the longest time, I was just incapable of letting go, because it felt like losing her ended everything I imagined for my life. And it did. It really did. My life as I knew it also ended when she died. And I didn't grieve that. I instead swallowed that as a pill of bitterness and let it grow. And the eventual awareness that everybody has a specific role actually came about when I heard a story about specifically dealing with the concept of reincarnation. about this family who had been praying for a child. They had been unable to have a child for the course of their marriage. They'd been married for like almost 30 years. And they went to this particular holy man and asked him to pray for them. And he did. And he said that when he went into the heavenly realms, that they told him that they would grant the petition and she would have a child, but that there were lessons to be learned from this and they shouldn't be too attached. Now, that's some scary sounding words from somebody you consider to be a holy man. A year later, they did have a kid. And then 3 years later, the child died. And they went back to this holy man and said to him, you know, how could God do this to us? And he said, this soul that chose to become incorporated and be your newborn made this decision because he's already lived a complete and full life. And the only thing that he hadn't done was basically be a child to a family that was struggling with their religiosity, so to speak. And so here he came and he turned them into very, very passionate believers, where previously their religious observance was mechanical and rote. But now they're facing this tsunami of grief. And so this righteous man says to them, you're not expected not to grieve. You're not expected not to be angry. You're not expected not to be sad. You're expected to focus on the gratitude for having the experience to begin with. And something in that story just clicked and rang and still rings in my mind to this day. And that's that depression in all forms, whether it's rooted in justifiable causes or chemically based or whatever, it's a very myopic disorder. It's incapable of seeing outside of its circumstances. I couldn't find the gratitude for the intense, loving relationship I had with my wife for decades. We fell in love in middle school. How many people can say that? Not a lot. Not a lot that actually, you know, go through high school and end up getting married and have children and are building a life. And I have that. And I could shake my fist in anger about it being gone, or I can dance and rejoice that I had that experience. And that's what I came to learn. And so I hope that ties in together with how it became very clear to me that the consequences are necessary to deal with in the moment. If I ever want to reach that point in life where that becomes permanent, I can't just drift through life depressed and hiding from everything, pretty much is what I was doing. I hope I'm not coming across as unsympathetic towards people with depression. That is my clinical diagnosis. But I haven't found myself trapped in bed with crippling depression in years. That triumph over it, I still feel it clawing at the back of my mind from time to time, but that ability to overcome it is directly a result of my NDEs and my exploration of what really happened from those.
Let's move forward to your third NDE.
Okay, so this was about 2 years after my wife had died, and I was in Mount Washington in Pittsburgh. It's basically across the river from downtown Pittsburgh. It's one of those small Appalachian mountains, not like the Rockies. And I was standing on the overlook, and There are details which I'm going to leave out or obfuscate for this because they shouldn't be public. And I was assaulted and I was thrown off the Overlook. And it was, I'm not actually sure when I came to. I'm not actually sure if this was a true NDE. I woke up at the bottom of the mountain after dark, and this happened in March of 2013, around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So I would have been unconscious at the bottom of the mountain for no less than 5 hours. When I did regain consciousness, I didn't know where I was. I didn't know how I got there. I didn't know why my clothes were ripped up. I couldn't speak correctly. I had a very, very severe concussion. And I had no money or identification. And I walked into a gas station. I just wanted to get home. I was not thinking rationally. I didn't even realize that I had a concussion. I just knew that something was wrong and I just wanted to go home. I eventually got home, went to sleep, and overnight in that dream, I remembered what happened the day before, including the NDE. And that's part of what made me question whether or not this is a valid NDE, because I myself don't know if I ever actually, was dead in any way. But being thrown off of a mountain and, not having any kind of soft cushioning to land on, regardless, I'm alive and it's a miracle. And there was a conscious experience from that, even though it was delayed. And that experience was the most informative of all of them. It sort of put everything into a context and a framework that made my entire life path make more sense. I was born into one particular religious tradition, and I'm not naming things on purpose because I don't believe that if a person isn't my faith path that they're going to hell or anything like that. I think that that's a very narrow perspective of things, and generally it's not true. But I had the experience of entering into that paradise-like environment where my wife was, and she was there still. And she expressed to me gratitude for what I had done in her life, which was very touching and moving and all of that jazz. But the main key was that she really was encouraging me to live and actually appreciate life and not just push through to have empathy and do the right thing, but to actually enjoy life. And, like I said, this was the key to really turning things around from depression to overcoming. And that experience, she wasn't the only presence. I saw numerous other people, including various famous holy men, including entities that aren't supposed to exist according to my current religious tradition. And all of it really expanded and opened my mind to how limited my experience in this body really is. What I've experienced outside of it contradicts things that I spent years believing. But it fits in this infrastructure of information that was revealed at the time, and I've been encouraged to write a book explaining. I think you reached out to me 2 years ago, or actually over 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, to do this interview. I'm not particularly out here trying to be like, I'm an NDE survivor, like, check out my story. But at the same time, I think that if more people did become aware of these underlying spiritual truths, which seem to manifest regardless of a person's background, then I think we could find more unity and more peace and more common ground to at least begin to explore how we can fellowship with each other without hate. You know, in the Jewish world, we believe that the reason for the destruction of the temple in the first century of this era was baseless hatred. And so this idea that the most holy place in our faith was destroyed because of hate without a cause, and we're in exile still to this day, 2,000 some years later, that should resonate with us in particular. But, you know, I feel like that's a lesson that the whole world would do well to learn. We shouldn't hate anyone, especially without cause. But, you know, when people want to justify their hate, I feel like a major caveat should be thrown out. You know, make sure that this is just and not you justifying. I don't find that it's ever justifiable to hate a human soul. You know, right now, world tensions are rather high. There's a lot of talk about potential for World War III breaking out from either of two major flashpoints, with potential third flashpoints on the horizon. I don't think that we can get through that unless we find unity that transcends these arbitrary artificial boundaries that we've created. And I do feel like religion is an arbitrary and artificial boundary, not spirituality. But that doesn't necessarily mean I believe every spiritual path is equally true either. But this isn't, you know, a discussion of, you know, which religion is best. And I don't think any of them have a monopoly, is my point.
After any of your NDEs, did you notice that you had any gifts that could be considered psychic that you didn't have prior?
This is one that I really don't like because in the Jewish tradition, we get pretty uptight about people throwing around words like prophecy. We do have a concept called Ruach HaKodesh, which is translated as Holy Spirit, which can cause a lesser level of divine inspiration and prophecy. And I do think that I've tapped into that very spontaneously. It happens most of all when I do very deep meditative work. I don't feel like it's any kind of consistently like accessible gift according to my will. It's more like something that I became more capable of sensing because that boundary between the physical and the spiritual has been blurred so many times. And so my conscious mind, the awareness of my soul, basically, has become more conscious of the spiritual than normal. And by that function, I think that I have a different perspective and view of things in general. And I think that happens to most NDEers, if not all. But I also believe that there is a mixed world of spirit. So we have our world, the physical world, which is clearly a mixture of evil and good. For those that say that evil is an illusion, I completely agree with you, but only from God's perspective, only from the perspective of the whole. For us inside the boundaries of creation, evil is obviously very tangible and real. And I don't think that ignoring it is the way to deal with it. I think that shining light and being light is the way to defeat it, because it has no substance. Just like darkness, it doesn't have substance. It describes the absence of a thing and not a thing itself. And evil will dissipate if everyone is doing good. But I, you know, the world immediately above this world, above, not geographically, but in the sense of priority, is a mixed world, according to the spiritual traditions that I've spent most of my time in. And so I'm not sure that just because someone has access to that particular realm, that it's necessarily a positive thing. You know, there's countless stories of mad prophets and false messiahs in many different religions and traditions. And I think that they do tap into something real and spiritual. I don't think that those are hallucinations. In fact, I've come to hate the word hallucination with a passion, because what I learned from expanding my research out into psychedelic research and exploring non-ordinary states of consciousness via hypnosis and meditation methods and ecstatic dance and fasting and other methods, I've come to realize that there are very core fundamental truths that pretty much every mystical tradition and spiritualist tradition in the world carries. And there's no real logical way, from an anthropological perspective, for all of these very disparate systems to come to these same truths unless they are somehow empirically true. And so I think that there's a world of mixture of good and evil in the spiritual realm that's the most adjacent to this world as well. And so having that access to spiritual awareness doesn't necessarily mean automatically that it's true. I kind of wonder sometimes if that's what's going on with people who suffer from schizophrenia, for example. Are they tapped into a spiritual reality that they don't understand and have no framework to organize? Is that why it's so chaotic and difficult to, you know, figure out? And but yeah, I've had dreams in particular that, after trying to psychoanalyze the symbolism of the dreams, ended up having a direct sort of prophetic fulfillment. That's happened to me 4 times now. Nothing recently. Sometimes I've seen auras, especially closer to the NDE event. After the second and third NDE, excuse me, I did see a faint sort of glow around people. And for me, that's really significant because I'm an aphantasic. For those that don't know what aphantasia is, it's fairly common, but it was only recently discovered. Some people, we just don't have a mind's eye, so to speak. Like, if you ask me to close my eyes and imagine something, I don't see imagery. The only time I see imagery is during an out-of-body experience, whether it's generated by an NDE or, you know, a deep trance. That's the only time I get any kind of visualization. My brain, in normal consciousness, works sort of like firing off these... I really have a hard time explaining it because it's very computer science-y, but these semantic networks. And so, like, if you throw out a word like love, my brain doesn't get an image or anything like that. Instead, it fires off this connected network of everything that I've ever experienced that I connect to the idea of love. And it's called a semantic web. And it's very weird because I for many years, I thought that when people were told to imagine or visualize things, that it was hyperbole. I didn't think people literally could generate imagery with their eyes closed. And so for me, anytime that I've had kind of visual experiences, it's been really profound because that's not normal for me.
Let me ask you this. Were there any elements of your NDE that you could see were talked about in the Torah or in any other Jewish text?
The overall experiences did fit very well with the Hasidic Kabbalistic understanding of things, which is the reason that this is where I am in my faith. The Torah doesn't really speak very clearly about life after death at all. This may come as a shock to a lot of listeners, but the entire Tanakh, or what Christians call the Old Testament, makes almost no mention whatsoever about life after death. There's a couple of passages that talk about a resurrection, and that's pretty much it. The tradition, which was expanded into Christianity, of belief in a world to come, a messianic age, all of that actually evolved from the Second Temple period, men of the Great Assembly, which included a lot of the prophets like Ezra, Nehemiah, Obadiah, Daniel, Hosea, and so on. And they sort of expanded out a lot of concepts, which at the end of the Second Temple period, so the time of Jesus, you actually see this conflict in Judaism is actually pretty monumental at that point, because you have these different sects. And the ruling sect, the one with the most power, was the Sadducees, the Sadducees. And they didn't believe in the resurrection. They didn't even believe we had souls. To them, it was all more of a legislative system, a system of rules to live by and govern life. And for sure it is that, but it's more than that as well. And that's what the Pharisees believed. And that's what eventually Christianity and Rabbinic Judaism also came to believe, is that there is a world to come. There is a resurrection. And I did get a lot of verification and validation for those ideas, but nothing that I could say is directly from the Torah, because like I said, it doesn't really speak on the subject. But the idea of, for example, Gan Eden, paradise, that's for sure where I was at with Cassie, with my wife. That's for sure where I found her in the first experience, when I didn't cross over into the light and I was sort of just hovering in the darkness. Once I actually was over there during the third NDE, that was where I saw all of these great saints and holy figures from all these different religions. And I was very confused, because I was still very much of the belief that the righteous of the Gentiles would be the type that would not start their own religions and cause problems. But what I came to experience was more like everybody that had a sincere search for truth is going to be rewarded for that sincere search for truth. We'll also have to deal with the consequences of any mistakes we make along the way. So be careful about how bad your mistakes are. You know, don't start a religion that, for example, calls for the wholesale slaughter of a people. But I hate to cut this short, but I just got a battery notice on my laptop, so I don't want it to suddenly cut off on us.
After watching this podcast, people may want to reach out to you and ask you questions. Are you open to that? And if so, how can they contact you?
I am open to that. You can contact me at ancientpathsslc@gmail.com. That's ancientpathsslc@gmail.com. Stands for Ancient Paths Spiritual Life Coaching at gmail.com. I have been doing that word of mouth for years, and recently, due to the insane inflation going on, I've decided to actually take it a little bit more commercially. So I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share that as well. And there should be a website within the next few weeks as well. I'm tinkering at that now.
All right. Before we wrap it up, can you give us one last positive message?
Major positive message that we should all hold on to. Every single one of us contains a spark of the divine soul, the super soul, a spark of God, if you will. We're all one at the most fundamental level. And if we can see that we're all, that phrase, image of God, man is created in the image of God, which is so very popular across all three Abrahamic faiths, is so key to understanding. And I believe that in Buddhism as well, we get a similar concept of not, you know, because it's a non-deistic religion, not anything to do with God, but that same idea, that same principle that we're all one and that ego is the illusion. If we recognize our unity and truth is very important. I believe truth is very important. I think I'm going to leave off with what I just saw in a meme recently. It said, argue as if you're right, but listen as if you're wrong. And I think that if we can all have that sense of passion for what we believe is true, but also humility to accept that we might not always be right, I think that we all will collectively make tremendous progress as humankind.
Julian, thank you for your message, and thank you for being my guest.
Thanks for having me again, Jeff.
Thanks for watching the Jeff Mara podcast. I really appreciate you. Another way to show support is through YouTube memberships. And if you do, there are loyalty badges and other perks depending on your level of membership. All you need to do is click the join button underneath the video to find out more. Thank you for your support.